It's Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a recent survey shows that many Americans don't understand how state government works and who represents them. A Wisconsin politics expert makes the case that we need to know more about civics at the state and local level. Right now, it's the first Monday of the month, and that means it's time for another edition of Mondays with Mike. Each month, Wisconsin Public Radio Director Mike Crane or Content Director Mike Arnold joins us on Central Time or the morning show to discuss the latest on WPR programming and operations. Mike Crane joins us today. We're going to talk about the retirement of longtime WPR news reporter Glenn Moberg, upcoming special programming, and more. And we want to hear from you. We want to know what's on your mind about WPR. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Is there a show or a kind of show you want WPR to carry? What do you want to hear more or less of? What questions do you have about what you hear on WPR or what we do? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Mike Crane, thank you so much for joining us.
Always good to be here and first time to be here with you. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is exciting. Thank you so much for being here with us. Well, first of all, some of you out there may have heard on the news that there was some flooding in Vilas Hall, which is where the main offices and studios of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television are located. Mike, first of all, what happened? And second, how's everybody doing?
So what happened is that there was a leak of what they call a standpipe, which I had to remind myself what that was. It's basically like a fire pipe that's just waiting to be used in case of a fire. But one of the things that we were hearing a lot in the news, even here on WPR, is that the cycles of freezing and thawing that have been happening put pipes at risk. And mostly we might have talked about, you know, the pipes in your basement. It was the pipes in our hallway or in the stairwell. And so there are a number of floors in Vilas Hall where we're based that there's some real water damage and everyone's dealing with it right now. We were very fortunate that our studios here on the seventh floor of Vilas Hall weren't affected, but our colleagues at Wisconsin Public Television have a lot of cleaning up to do and some moving of some offices. In fact, some of them are temporarily moving right into our big production studio, Buck Studio, to be able to continue their work. And it's also been challenging for them because they have a big deal event that actually Larry Mueller from WPR will be appearing at, and that's the Garden and Landscape Expo in Madison. And so they're also working on that while cleaning up and so on. And so everyone's trying to pull together. We've tried to help where we can, and it's a relief that things aren't worse, but there is a lot of cleanup to do.
Mike, it's been a pretty rough week here at Vilas Hall. We had the cold weather that closed down Vilas Hall and followed by the flooding. What can you say about the folks who work here and the job they've done over the past week and a half to keep this place going?
Thank you for offering me the opportunity to just say how remarkable people are here. The job that was totally the focus of everybody that's connected with it was how do we stay on the air and make sure that we're delivering on the promise of the programs that everybody expects to hear, and that the same for our web team and anyone else behind the scenes. They were just making sure through, I've come to call it Freezemageddon, through all of that and through this, we've managed to really stay on the air. I mean, there are things that can blow up on you. Luckily, that hadn't happened so much for the radio station, and we do have plans for emergency operations. Luckily, as a statewide network, we do have things set up so we could operate from a different studio if we needed to.
Sure.
That's not perfect either, but we have really good plans and really great people that put it together.
Mike Crane joins us. He is the Wisconsin Public Radio Director, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let's go right to the phones. Let's go to Peg in Madison. Good afternoon, Peg. Welcome to Central Time. You're on with Michael Crane. Hello.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. My comment was that I often listen to programs after the fact as a podcast or on demand. you know, when I'm exercising or whatever. And I like having one topic to listen to rather than having to switch around. And in particular, when you combine two or more topics in an hour, I'm not always interested in all of those topics. And so I find myself listening less and less to the local programming. I do listen to On Point and I listen to 1A because they address a single topic in an hour, and sometimes Larry Mueller. But I kind of miss, or I do miss, the programs where you have a more in-depth one-hour topic per program, and wish that you would bring that back again. And I'm wondering if people who listen to things after the fact, to podcast or whatever, would find this more convenient than having to be switching around if they're not particularly interested in all of the topics that are in a particular program. So I wondered what your comment is on that.
Peg, thank you so much for the call. Mike, is that something like, you know, going to one topic per hour or one topic per show, is it something that's under consideration, or does it depend on the topic itself?
It definitely depends on the topic itself, and I'd say that in the recent past, and Peg, you've noticed this, we've been doing a lot more multiple topic hours in the morning. We've been doing that on Central Time for quite a while, and the basic idea is that there are things that if we plan to use a whole hour, we probably couldn't sustain a whole call-in show about that. And so sometimes there'll be a full hour, sometimes not. But also, I want to key in on something you said, Peg, that's really spot on and is a challenge for us. And that is that podcast listening, or what we used to call on-demand listening, is definitely different from listening to the radio. And so even though we've been sending out archived programs online for many, many years, the blooming of the podcast revolution means that we are wrestling with this with a lot of our shows. Some of you have listened, I'm sure, to Beta, one of our newest shows, and that has a couple of topics at once. But we're asking ourselves, should we break the show up and send out the individual topics separately? But then would that make it harder for people to find? So we're definitely struggling with that, and we really appreciate your insight. And you might figure this out, but our staff wants to know avidly what you have to say, all of you listening. And so thanks for that call, Peg, and we'll pass it along.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Joe in Sauk County. Good afternoon, Joe. Welcome to Central Time. Hello.
Hi, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. Mike, I believe it was you I talked to in the morning back in late September or the first week of October, and explained that I was an immigrant from Indiana, mm-hmm. and that I missed 1A Friday news roundup days because of Science Friday. And I love Science Friday, too.
I remember that call, yes.
I wondered if you'd given that any more consideration and airing that later in the evening or something.
One thing that we find is the more that we juggle the schedule, the harder it is for listeners to keep track of it. And so we did talk about it, but it came to no resolution for exactly that reason. I know that I think we talked about this, and certainly we've talked about it on the Mondays with Mike segment, that that opportunity to listen yourself using the podcast does also exist. But I get it, Joe, that a lot of us, I'm one of them, often I do listen to podcasts, but often I just want to turn on the radio and have the wonderful folks inside the radio take care of it for me. So no conclusion on that, but also no change at the moment.
Listeners may have noticed, Mike, that they haven't heard Glenn Moberg's voice in a little while. Glenn, of course, is our reporter in Wausau and host of the regional program Route 51. He's also been an occasional fill-in on our various statewide shows. What's happening with Glenn?
Well, this past fall, Glenn was diagnosed with a terminal stomach cancer, and due to his prognosis, he decided to retire effective at the end of last month. Glenn's been with us at WPR since 2003, and over the last 15 years, he's reported on lots of news in the central region. He's hosted that program, Route 51, that people in that area are very familiar with. And one of the things that was really interesting to me about Glenn is that he's always kind of lived his life in front of us. He was on TV before he was on the radio, and so in telling us of his decision to retire, he wrote, "You need a fire in your gut to do this kind of work, and unfortunately, in my case, the fire has been replaced by cancer." Glenn is hoping that others will learn from his experience and sharing it. And so we're deeply saddened by his condition. He's fighting it and needs his full energy to be focused on doing so. And we already miss him around the station and hope that he does well.
This is the February edition of Mondays with Mike with WPR Director Mike Crane. We want to hear your thoughts about WPR at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about WPR? Any particular show or type of show you'd like to hear more or less of? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up that conversation and take your calls after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Darrell Connor. Right now, we're talking with WPR Director Mike Crane during this February edition of Mondays with Mike. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about WPR programming or operations? Is there a certain show you want to hear or maybe at a different time or perhaps not at all? Any thoughts about WPR.org, the social media pages, the WPR app, or other techie type stuff? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Mary Kay in Kenosha. Good afternoon, Mary Kay. Welcome to Central Time.
Hello, Mike. I'd like to know what happened to that program you had about job openings. Like if you were an employer and you were looking for people, it was a really good show.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate your remembering that. It's been quite a while since we did that segment. It was a part of the show that preceded Central Time. So that's 3, 4, 5 years ago. And was part of Ben Maron's show, At Issue. And we certainly still have an interest in jobs and openings and that sort of thing, but it hasn't been on the mind of the gang here to do that specific kind of show. Maybe that'd be great, maybe not. You know, I know the job market now is getting pretty tough to even find people to hire, so we'll chalk that up as a suggestion for our wonderful programmers here to consider adding something like that once in a while. Thanks, Mary. Mary Kay.
Thanks for the call, Mary Kay. Let's go to Tom in Port Wayne. Good afternoon, Tom. Welcome to Central Time. Hello.
Hello, and I just want to make a comment real quick about Glenn. You know, he's part of that radio voice family of mine, and I'm really saddened to hear that he has that type of battle ahead of him. So we've become a radio family in a way.
Yes.
Yeah. My question is this. What is the protocol for callers in the first place? In the second place, is there a type of question that a caller can ask of a guest on a show or not? And I'll give you a real quick example.
Sure.
I was told that I couldn't use the terminology of throwing the towel in directed at a particular guest that was on the show. And I thought that was a rather innocuous way of describing something. And I was told that that was confrontational. So if you could just give me some protocol on callers and the types of questions they can ask, I would appreciate that, Mike.
Sure. Thanks for the question. You raise a couple of interesting points there. In general, the protocol is very simple, which is that when you call in, our call screener asks, you know, what is it you'd like to comment on or ask a question about? And they are trying then to kind of help coach a person as they call in, simply because a lot of times people need a little help to really form a single question to get in on the show. But that's generally about it. And not knowing your specific instance in any detail, I'll ask about it later when we get off the show to find out about that specific comment. I do know that sometimes metaphors mean things that, or similes for that matter, mean things we don't necessarily know about. And they come up all the time in our conversation here. For instance, there are people will say things like a brown bag lunch. And that seemed like a really innocuous thing, until some of our African-American colleagues reminded us that a brown bag was, in certain settings, used as a test of a person's color and whether they could come into a meeting. And so now we call those lunch and learns here, because we don't want to use that metaphor if it has meanings that are hurtful to people. So I will look into the one that you brought up. But the basic protocol is simply to help you to form the question so it works great with the show.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Dennis in Two Rivers. Good afternoon, Dennis. Welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Mike. I've been listening to WHID out of Green Bay, and the last few days I can barely hear the broadcast. Sometimes I get mostly static. Sometimes I hear remnants of some other station.
I'm not exactly sure what might be happening there. I have a couple of theories, which I'll ask the engineers about and see if there's a problem we know about. We did put in some new equipment recently that most reports suggested made it sound great everywhere, so this is worrisome. One thing that does happen usually in the summer but might be a factor is that sometimes signals from other places can interfere because of weird atmospheric effects, and that's a possibility. I know that during the summer, for instance, I often get reports of people in your area and up through the whole Door Peninsula hearing the stations from Michigan, and that's that atmospheric effect. So thanks for the report, Dennis. We will definitely look into that.
Wisconsin Public Radio Director Mike Crane joins us. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 if you have a question for Mike. We want to hear from you. Post. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. Before we go back to the phones, Mike, President Trump is going to give his State of the Union address to Congress tomorrow night. How are we planning to cover it?
So we'll have the live broadcast on both of our networks, the Ideas Network and the NPR News and Classical Music Network, preempting the things that would normally be on there. And we'll have great coverage from the NPR reporters. They'll be checking in as they lead up to the actual speech, after the speech, and then they'll also have the Democratic response and do some additional analysis after that.
We'll have plenty of reaction and analysis to the State of the Union on the Ideas Network on Wednesday, including on the morning show and right here on Central Time. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Deborah in Milwaukee. Good afternoon, Deborah. Welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I didn't know you'd be on because I listened to that. You were moving, and I'm so glad. Moving to, like, help out in other areas, but I just really love your voice, and so I'm glad that you're still on Central Time, Daryl.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm in for Rob today.
Oh, okay, who I also love. But anyway, I miss Gene Ferraca, Van Marens, and Kathleen Dunn, and I thought, oh, boy, a reunion show would be great. And also, I love Simply Folk and Garden Talk and Science Friday, but Ask Me Another seems to be on a lot. And the other thing is, how do you decide which... Two more things I have. How do you decide which programs to broadcast on Saturday? And then Away With Words comes on early Sunday, and I wish that were repeated.
Well, so the decisions for any broadcast are challenging because there are a lot of options out there. And one of the things that's kind of driven our Saturdays for as long as I can remember is for it to be at least part of the time either lighter or exploring subjects that maybe don't come up so much during the week. So that might be things like People's Pharmacy. Sorry to know that Ask Me Another doesn't work for you. It has turned out to be a very popular show for us. But that's the basic idea, is a kind of an entertaining start to the weekend. Thanks for the idea of repeating. We do repeat some shows that have proven to be very popular, although I'd say over time that's become less common because of podcasting. We know that people can catch things at other times on their own command. And so we're always debating that as we go.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Rose in Menominee Falls. Good afternoon, Rose. Welcome to Central Time. Hello.
Hi there. I just had two quick comments. One, I really enjoyed the travel guy, and I don't seem to hear him often enough, or he doesn't seem to be on as long when he is on. So I would encourage more of that. And then my other quick comment was, when I heard you mention Ben Maron's name just a few minutes ago, And I had thought of this before, that it would be fun to have for us old-timers who have been listening to public radio for a long time to have a reunion show and have Ben Marins and Joy Cardine and Kathleen Dunn and whoever else, you know, people had, just for a fun kind of show.
Yeah, it has certainly been fun when we've run into each other in our off-the-air lives, so I know exactly what you mean. I don't have recent reports on everybody. I do know that Joy is having a great time as a retiree. So maybe at some point we could have her come in and do something with us. But generally the reports of the retired folks anyway is that they're loving it. And those of us that still have a number of working years left feel a little jealous. Thanks for the call.
Let's take one more call. Let's go to Louise in Dodgeville. Good afternoon, Louise. Welcome to Central Time. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about your Facebook page. In previous month or year ago, each show had their own Facebook page, I think, and I could find information pretty quickly and easily. But now it seems like it's all merged onto one page. So I was just curious about that decision and if you'd ever bring back the separate pages again on Facebook. And I can take my answer off the air.
Oh, great. Thanks. You hit on something that we had a lot of conversation about. What had happened over time, and it worked pretty well in the earlier days of Facebook, is we had individual show pages for every show. But the way that the internet world seems to work is that the way that they'll tell us that they've changed the algorithm. In other words, the sort of robot mind of Facebook was doing things in a different way that caused us to see that all of those individual show pages ended up having not that much audience. And so we decided to combine all of them into the Ideas Network page and the WPR page and maybe a few others, but mostly combined. And that's because we thought it would deliver more audience and therefore more service to the Facebook pages. And that's exactly what's happened. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but a lot more people are experiencing the Facebook. And yet, even we feel sometimes like we'd like to figure out a way to give people access to the individual shows as well.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you spending the time.
Great to be here, and I look forward to the next time.
Mike Crane is the director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He joins us the first Monday of the month, either on Central Time or the morning show, to talk about the latest on WPR programming and operations. Coming up after the news, we'll find out why Americans could be doing a lot better when it comes to knowledge of state politics and government. I'm Darrell Conner. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner. After a report last week that Foxconn was abandoning its plans to build a manufacturing plant in southeastern Wisconsin, the company now says it will proceed with the facility after all. Coming up, we'll discuss the latest developments with Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke. First, state government has a big impact on our lives. State lawmakers set policies on everything from health care to road funding and much more. But despite that, many Americans lack an understanding of how state government works and who represents them. That's according to a new survey from Johns Hopkins University, which finds a state-sized gap in our knowledge of politics. Fewer than 20% of survey respondents could name their state legislators, and a third were unable to name their governor. In addition, many respondents didn't know if their state had a one- or two-house legislature or being a state legislator was a full-time job. Additionally, more than half of respondents didn't know if their state had a constitution. Eric Giordano joins us now to talk about the survey and some of the potential reasons behind its findings. He's an associate professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point and director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Eric, I want to ask you right off the bat, were you surprised by the results of this survey?
Not really. I mean, I think we've seen surveys similar to this. Most have not focused on the state level. Most have focused on the national level. But, you know, we're probably all familiar with the surveys where most Americans could name the five members of the Simpsons family but couldn't name the five freedoms of the First Amendment. So, you know, we're kind of used to this lack of civics knowledge, unfortunately.
Why do you think Americans are lacking when it comes to knowledge about how state government works and also who represents them?
Well, I think there's a couple issues we could look at. I think number one, There's sort of a feeling, I think, that we as Americans have had for forever, I guess, since our inception, that, you know, if we don't really need to worry about something, if it's working, if it ain't broke, you know, don't fix it. There was an interesting quote from a famous political scientist, of course, famous to us political scientists, Morris Fiorina. He said this: voters typically have one comparatively hard bit of data. They know what life has been like during an incumbent's administration. So, you know, our data set as voters is pretty limited to what we experience and what we care most about. And most people don't, care about the nitty-gritty of how government operates and what it does, unless it affects us directly, and then we suddenly care a lot.
Well, the survey looked specifically at state government, but if we drill down even further, speaking of when you said how it affects all of us, if we drill this down even further and looked at local government, like city or county government, do you think Americans would know even less?
I suspect they would. We do have opportunities, more opportunities for service at the local level. So you're going to have a cadre of people who are willing to participate and who, but an even smaller amount who are willing to come to a town meetings, city councils, county board meetings. We know maybe a little bit about what's going on locally, so that matters. But, you know, unless it's something that affects us, our neighborhood, again, I don't think we look at the ins and outs of how budgets are put together and zoning issues and laws. And I think that a lot of that just goes really beyond us because we don't need to know those things most of the time.
Well, to expand on that, why is it important that we as Americans understand how our state government works and who represents us?
Right. So it's a great question. And the big concern really is about a lack of knowledge means that we are potentially open to manipulation. And I think there's evidence historically in many other countries as well as our own that, you know, you can have people who can come in absent information, accurate information, who can put out stories that just aren't true. I hate to use the word fake news, but, you know, we're in the era of fake news and fake news is real. And people can get excited when they hear things that may not be accurate or that may exaggerate certain things. And that can skew reality and skew what we understand as truth.
You were talking about one of the consequences being, you know, falling prey to fake news. But what are some of the other consequences of not understanding who represents us and how state government works?
Well, just to carry on that theme just a little bit further, it's a lot easier for special interests, for example, to come in on a specific issue and really spend a lot of money in advertising and around particular issues. And suddenly, we are inundated with information, but it's information from a very particular point of view, and we don't really have enough information to counter that, and therefore, you know, we are susceptible to be manipulated that way. So that I just wanted to emphasize that point. I think in general, there's a lot of things that do affect us that we ought to be caring about, things as simple as whether the state or local elected officials get to make the rules on how things are done, everything from, like you said, transportation issues to budgeting to, all sorts of different things, mining issues. And if we aren't aware of how government works and who is responsible, then we're going to have very little effectiveness in making change.
Eric Giordano joins us. He is an associate professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point and director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. And we're talking about why many Americans are lacking knowledge of how state government works and also what we can do about it. So, Eric, what do you see as the factors behind this lack of knowledge?
Well, one of the things that the author of the study points out, Benjamin Ginsberg from Johns Hopkins, is that we're lacking in media coverage of state and local affairs. And some would argue, especially, you know, out here where I'm living in Wausau, Wisconsin, and in other parts of outstate from Milwaukee and Madison, you know, we're facing news deserts. We're facing a situation where we aren't necessarily getting the news that we need in order to make informed civic choices. And I think that's a serious problem. I mean, I can turn on the news right now, and I can flip the channel to multiple cable channels, and I'll probably hear the same 3 to 5 stories repeated over and over after every hour, and yet I will not see anything on about local news except perhaps, you know, some sound bites in the early evening and early morning.
That is exactly one of the things that the John Hopkins researchers cited. It was the lack of media coverage of state affairs as one of the big reasons behind this. How can we change that?
Well, you know, I'm a WPR fan, so I would say more people need to listen to WPR. I think they actually went, you know, we interestingly have been working with the Wisconsin Humanities Council on a project up in Superior, and we were doing some focus groups there, and one of the news sources that they cited for state news was Wisconsin Public Radio. But outside of that, interestingly, they really found it was difficult to find information about what's going on in Madison around government and politics. And I don't think it's limited to Superior. There are many other places where we aren't really getting this information.
You know, I remember in school when I was young, learning a lot about how the federal government works, but not so much about your state government. Can you talk about the role that schools can play in civic classes? Are they going to be the ones moving forward to lead this charge?
Well, Darrell, you're pressing all my buttons. Of course, I am not going to lie. I fundamentally believe that schools have a potentially huge role here. And frankly, I would argue that, you know, we need to do much more around civic education. And yes, we do have some civics in 8th grade, 10th grade. But, you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And most people have said that we need more. I think most people probably agree that we need more. At least that's my contention. I would love to see schools leading the charge here. But I think it really is going to take, you know, some significant effort. Now, we do have a state law that says that, you know, all graduating seniors, you know, from Wisconsin high schools have to have passed a 100-question civics test. However, that's not really focused so much on state politics. So again, we're sort of still lacking in that area.
There was a comment from Dave on Facebook who writes, not only do Americans not know how government works, many don't care. And that's really the scary part. And you were talking about that earlier. What do you make of that assessment?
Well, you know, I think it's troubling. I think, you know, as a citizen, you know, my personal belief is that we have a responsibility to vote, to know why we're voting, to know who we're voting for, and to understand at least on some basic level how government affects our lives. But the truth is, you know, we're living in a world where there's a lot of stresses, where people don't have all of their needs being met, and they're sort of living day to day. And then I think we're also distracting ourselves, you know, with a lot of media, you know, electronics, things that entertain us but aren't necessarily educating us.
And finally, what would be your recommendations going forward so that we could all get a little better about understanding state politics and government?
Well, I think there's nothing better. You mentioned education. I would love to see more experiential-based education where students aren't just, you know, memorizing the facts. I think that is important. I think we need to understand the Constitution. We need to understand state government and its branches and roles. But I would like to see students interacting with real legislators, with policymakers, with policy influencers, linking an experience of learning about government with talking with people who are in government. And the more that we can do that kind of education, both in and out of school, I think the better off we'll be.
Eric, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Eric Giordano is an associate professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point and director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. He joined us to talk about why many Americans are lacking knowledge of how state government works and what can we do about it. Coming up, we'll talk with the number 2 Republican in the state assembly about the latest developments on the Foxconn plant in Racine County. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner. Coming up, a new bill would prohibit hunting contests in Wisconsin. We talk with a supporter of the bill and why she thinks this needs to end. First, it looks like Foxconn is planning to build a big manufacturing plant in southeastern Wisconsin after all. Last week, it was reported that the company was abandoning that project, citing a changed global marketplace, and that it would focus more on research and development. Despite the shift, Foxconn said it was still committed to the deal it made with the state to invest $10 billion and create 13,000 jobs in Wisconsin. In exchange, it would get $4 billion in state and local tax incentives. Now, state Democrats blame Republicans for crafting a bad deal. Republicans blame Governor Evers for being anti-business and creating economic uncertainty. Then on Friday, Foxconn put out a statement saying that after a personal conversation between Chairman Terry Gou and President Trump, the manufacturing plans are back on. We got Democratic reaction from Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hentz after the scale back was first reported. Right now, we're joined by Jim Steinecke, a Republican state representative from Kaukauna, and the Assembly Majority Leader. Representative Steinecke, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for spending a few minutes with us. I take it, first of all, that you're happy that Foxconn is sticking to its manufacturing plans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's obviously last week was a little bit confusing for folks, and glad that we came out the other end of it with the promise still intact that Foxconn is going to move forward. I think we got to move beyond the blame game and really start focusing on making sure that these jobs come to fruition and the economy of Wisconsin benefits from them.
Now, because it's changed a couple of times, can you remind all of us of what exactly Foxconn is planning on building in Mount Pleasant?
Sure. I mean, basically what we're going to see over the course of the next 18 months is a liquid crystal module back-end packaging plant. Okay, that's a mouthful right there. They're also planning on building out a high-precision molding factory, a system integration assembly facility, centers for rapid prototyping, R&D, and a town center all within the next 18 months.
Now, does this past week have you feeling at least a little bit uneasy about what Foxconn is going to do in the state?
No, I mean, there's been, we've seen this before with some of the reporting surrounding Foxconn, that there's been some misinformation out there, some things that come to light, and then Foxconn comes out and denies what was being reported in the press. So we're just focused on moving forward, working with WEDC and Foxconn to make sure that this plant comes to fruition.
You know, Jim, you were talking about the fact that both sides have to stop playing the blame game. How can we get to a point where that can come to an end and just do what's best for the state moving forward? And by that, I mean making sure that we have those 13,000 jobs for the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I think the biggest thing is, I think it would be helpful if Governor Evers came out and said he was committed to the existing deal and that he was going to do everything he could to make sure that this moves forward as crafted. Because I think certainty is a very important thing for business, whether it's a small business in Wisconsin or a multinational company. They need some certainty. And when Governor Evers talks about getting rid of the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit, when he talks about renegotiating some aspects of the deal, I think that uncertainty does play a part in some of the concerns from the company. But that being said, I think if he indicated that he was committed to this deal going forward, I think that would go a long way towards quieting some of the opposition from his own party.
Jim Steinecke joins us as Republican State Representative from Kaukauna and also the Assembly Majority Leader, and we're talking about the latest at Foxconn. Is there any sense of what President Trump and Chairman Gou talked about that made Foxconn change its mind about abandoning the plant?
Boy, I'd certainly love to have been listening in on that phone call when it happened, as I'm sure many would. But I'm not sure exactly what the conversation was. I haven't heard from either the company leaders or the administration on what was discussed. But whatever it was, obviously put the company more at ease and it was helpful in continuing to keep this project moving forward.
Representative Steinicke, there is probably still some concern about from many Wisconsinites about the fact that First Foxconn said that they couldn't build the LCD television screens because of competition, and now it sounds like they may be building some after all. Is that something that you're going to continue to monitor?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, you know, one of the things that the opponents to this deal tried to say while we were putting it through the legislature, and have even continued to say afterwards, that this was just a blank check to a company. Obviously, that's not the case. They missed benchmarks in their first year to create a certain number of jobs. They didn't get any tax credits because of that. So this really is a deal that has very solid protections in there for the taxpayers. So our responsibility as legislators and the administration working with WEDC is to make sure that those jobs are accounted for, the capital investment is accounted for, and no money goes out until jobs are created or capital investments are made.
How much flexibility is in this deal for Foxconn, meaning that they apparently don't have to build a factory, do they?
The deal is entirely structured around the number of jobs, the amount of capital investment, and making sure those two are tied directly to any credits that are paid out. So in order to qualify for any of the credits, those jobs that I think the average salary has to be over $30,000. If a job doesn't pay $30,000, it's not eligible for tax credits. The capital investments have to be made. All that stuff has to be done before they qualify for anything. So when it comes down to the particulars of what exactly they make, I don't think that matters as much as that the jobs are there, the capital investment is made, and then the average salary per job is accounted for.
In a news release after it was reported that Foxconn was shifting to more of a research and development focus, the state Republican Party blamed Governor Evers for not showing leadership in a history of anti-business rhetoric. But the company has insisted that it has a good relationship with Evers. And I know you've alluded a little bit earlier, Representative Steinicke. But what's your read on the whole Evers factor?
Like I said, I think the only concern that I can see going forward is some of the uncertainty surrounding the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit and his statements in the past that said he wanted to renegotiate aspects of the deal. If the company is happy and feels like the deal is intact, I think that's the best indication going forward that we're gonna be able to create these jobs and make these investments. Because after all, for every dollar that's invested by the state, economic projections show that $18 is gonna be returned to the state's economy. So it's a good deal all around, and hopefully as we go forward, everybody can work together, the legislature, the governor, WEDC, and the company, to make sure this happens.
Foxconn didn't create enough jobs in 2018 to qualify for state tax credits, is something that you talked about. It finished the year with about 178 full-time employees. It needed about 82 more. Are you concerned about that?
No. I mean, first of all, it just proves what we've said all along, that these credits are tied directly to job creation, that there are benchmarks in place, and if they don't reach those benchmarks, they don't get the tax credit. So I think it proves our case that we've made over the course of the last couple of years, and proves that the opponents were wrong about that. But anybody that knows anything about business knows that things don't always happen exactly on a set schedule. So we're confident, given the company's reassurances that they're committed to the state of Wisconsin and the fact that they've already made hundreds of millions of dollars of investments and over 1,000 jobs, 1,000 people have been working directly related to that site. We feel confident that this is going to move forward.
We have about a minute left. I wanted to ask you, what's your reaction to Democrats who say that this deal with Foxconn is a loser for the state?
I think it's sad. I mean, people can have differing opinions on certain aspects of the deal, but when you're talking about a project of this magnitude that's going to diversify Wisconsin's economy virtually overnight, it should be something that we're all rooting for. We shouldn't be rooting against the success of this deal. We should be rooting for it, because after all, even in the early stages of this project, it's been proven that every corner of the state is going to benefit from this deal.
Representative Steinicke, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Jim Steinicke is a Republican state representative from Kaukauna and the Assembly Majority Leader. We talked with him about Foxconn's plan to press on with its massive manufacturing facility in Mount Pleasant. You can also go back and hear our interview last week with Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz at WPR.org. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page if you have questions, or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Well, as you all know, Super Bowl 53 is now in the books. It was on, of course, yesterday, won by the New England Patriots 13-3 over the Los Angeles Rams. And along with the Super Bowl, which brings in huge numbers, although the numbers are a little bit down, according to initial reports, than from years past, we all watch the Super Bowl also for the commercials. And the online sports site Yardbarker ranked some of their best and worst commercials. So here's some of their best. It included Devours, which is a frozen food company. They had a commercial called Food Porn, which was actually well done, was tastefully done, and a lot of innuendo. Hyundai's The Elevator with Jason Bateman. Michelob Ultra's The Robot. There were a lot of robot commercials yesterday. Verizon's The Coach Who Wouldn't Be Here. That was a spotlight on Los Angeles Chargers coach Anthony Lynn's car accident. It's a very good one. Some of the worst. Oil of Olay had a killer skin, which was a takeoff of some of the slasher movies. Pepsi, More Than Okay with Steve Carell, Lil Jon, and Cardi B. And Amazon's Not Everything Makes the Cut with Harrison Ford and Forest Whitaker. My personal favorites were the bubbly commercial, the sparkling water commercial with Michael Bublé, the Bud Light Game of Thrones commercial I liked, and the NFL 100-year game with various Hall of Famers. That was probably my favorite one. Ironic, it was the NFL. I'm Darrell Conner. There's more to come right here on Central Time.